Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, this is the first episode to be released after the smashing success of our Midwest and East Coast tour. We've come back closer friends than ever, haven't we?
Yeah, we've come back. We came back to a hero's welcome, a ticker tape parade to honor our return from our tour.
I'm still picking confetti out of my hair.
Adam, I'm having a tough time maintaining the fiction of this premise that we are recording this after the tour, when in fact we are recording it before the tour even starts.
That's right. We're about a week and a half maybe before we kick off this tour. What are you thinking about? Ben, your thoughts. This is also the last time we're going to record before going out on that tour due to my significant work demands. Any final thoughts before you take the field?
I was thinking today, it's going to be so nice. You know, like we've put in so much work to extend the runway so much. And I was thinking, it's going to be great. I'm going to have a few weeks off where, you know, we don't have this constant beast we need to feed. And then I was like, wait, I'm going to be fucking podcasting every goddamn day for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a totally different beast. And you have to feed it in person. I'm way looking forward to the tour because I think it'll just mean getting out from behind my desk, which is a place I've been for like 3 weeks straight on various deadlines. Like, I think we've talked about this before, like, edit bunker time can make you crazy, and I have been in the bunker for a long, long, long time. So it's time to be out with the people.
Pressing the flesh.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
I think it's going to be great, Adam. I think we're going to have a ton of fun. And I can't wait to see this movie that we're reviewing.
I know. Time to watch the movie and study up on that. What is your biggest hope for the tour, and what is your greatest fear for the tour?
I would say my greatest fear is that we're basically doing the same show 10 times. We got 10 engagements, and it's 10 of the show. So my fear is that we have staleness issues that present themselves. Given our last tour, like, it's not that big a fear, but you know, it occurred to me. I'd say my big hope is that it goes as well as our last tour did. Like, we didn't have any game tape on ourselves before we went out on our last tour, and it was just so much fun, and it was really great to meet people. You know, like, we had never really met anybody that listened to our program before that, and it was super encouraging. It was groups of wonderful people, and, like, people who, you know, came up and had, like, said really genuinely kind things to us and, you know, joked around with us. And it was fun to hang. And I think that is going to be the best part.
Yeah. I mean, after the first show in Seattle that we did in November, and there was like the greeting line afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, after going through that experience, that became the thing I looked forward to at every show. Like, it was almost like during the show, I was excited for that. Like,
while
we were
checking your watch, you're like, "Yeah, can't wait to be done with this bullshit."
When are we going to take some pictures? Yeah, that's going to be great. And this is going to be on such a larger scale, too, that's going to be an interesting challenge, you know?
Yeah, I think the scale thing is really amazing. Like, I think that the smallest venue we are playing on this tour is twice the size of the biggest venue we played on the last tour. So that's going to be a real head trip.
That's nothing to be nervous about at all.
I love the idea that our tour is just a catastrophe and we're here recording this as a little time capsule for everybody to, you know, they've seen the tweets, they've seen the Facebook post about what a fucking complete massacre of unfunny bullshit it was.
One of us is still in jail, like the mugshot has been memed.
Oh, they were so young and optimistic and naive. What sweethearts.
When you get 3 public urination strikes, that's life in prison, isn't it, Ben? That's it.
Yeah, they don't even put points on your license. They punch holes in it.
Ugh. Oh, no. Well, hopefully we will have kept it together enough to bring you fresh pod by the time we get back. Fresh pod like this, Ben.
Speaking of fresh pod, Adam, we've got some fresh faces in the episode we reviewed today.
Yeah, like a Greek chorus of Noxzema commercial kids, huh? Fresh-faced and ready to go.
Splashing water on themselves in seductive slow motion.
It's season 7, episode 15, Lower Decks.
This episode opens with Riker and Troi very publicly talking about the people that work for them. They're like sitting in 10 forward where anybody can overhear them going like,
Fletcher has more experience with propulsion systems.
But Carstairs is better with people.
Guys, closed door conversation, please.
Yeah, I mean, 10 forward ends up being the primary location for this episode, right? So much so that even the exteriors have 10 forward lit up in a way that I don't remember seeing.
Every time they show the ship from outside, instead of an over-top view, it tends to be a from-the-bottom view, which I guess is a nod to the title.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the nose of the ship is conspicuously bright, with 10 right. forward being lit up like it is.
Right, and so Riker and Troi are going over these personnel reports, and they're like grading people, right? They're grading people for promotion. And even they're kind of sick of it.
Didn't we just do crew evaluation reports?
Yeah, it's got to be pretty obnoxious when you are the person who's responsible for, like, I mean, we know that there's 1,000 people on the ship. We know that at least 700 or 800 of them are small children. But, you know, Riker oversees, like, at least 100 or 200 officers, probably.
Right.
You know, he's got to make calls about when they get promoted and stuff. I mean, that's hard in a small office. This is a big one.
It's true. So we're getting like a cut between Riker and Troi and this group of 4 who we'll get to know. This Greek chorus that I referred to before. That's 2 back zips and 2 front zips.
It's Wait, who's a front?
Ogawa.
Who's a front zip?
The Vulcan.
He's a front zip
and,
for sure.
And Lavelle in the red, the guy with Peter Fasinelli vibes.
Oh, I thought he was a back.
No.
He's a front. What?
2 and 2.
Why does Sito get the back zip? Like, we know why Ogawa gets the back zip, but why does Sito get the back zip?
I think it's because Sito has top billing of this 4.
Like, yeah.
I think she gets the most screen time. They're not going to stick her in the spandex. What I didn't quite remember from about this episode before seeing it again was that Lower Decks refers to not only these 4 officers, but it also refers to a waiter who is just as much of a character in this episode as anyone else.
Yeah, and it's the waiter is played by Bruce Beatty, who's like a real that guy.
Yeah.
He's been in a lot of stuff.
You sure about dessert?
Yes, don't tempt me.
You could argue he's as much of, if not more of a that guy, than any of the 4 we're seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess save Ogawa.
Absolutely.
This group of 4, I think, sort of demonstrates 4 different emotional philosophies, right? I think Ogawa is like the bubbly oversharer.
Don't worry about it, Sal.
Lavelle is paranoid, just paranoid at all times.
How can I have a good time when my career's being decided across the room?
Sito is nice, but she has a dark past.
Can't we just try and have a good time here?
And the Vulcan is a tryhard.
You can't really believe that what you're doing will influence the outcome of your evaluation.
And I think these are pretty familiar character types in any workplace, right?
Sure. And it's cool to catch back up with Sito because we have seen her before in the Wesley is covering up the death of a cadet episode. She was involved in the cover up. And that very, you know, like, I think that the writers could have burned calories trying to remind us of who she is early in this episode, and they had the confidence mm-hmm. to save that for the middle.
Right.
So, yeah, they're all sitting there, like, just out of earshot, wondering what's going to go on with their promotion. And Riker and Troy are there on the other side of 10 Forward talking about that promotion. And Ben, the waiter, is going back and forth between them, stirring shit up.
Apparently, you two are up for the same job.
Ben's character plays this as something that's fun, that is amusing him, and that he believes is amusing to the other people. But this is not nice.
No.
I don't think Ben should be doing this. Ben is manipulating.
Yeah.
I think he knows how untouchable he is. And that is established right from the start, right?
Yeah.
Like, no one gives a shit.
He's just
a civilian.
He's outside the chain of command, which is a place that I like to be, you know? Like,
yeah.
I like if I go to a show and I'm there to film it, like not really being in the crowd, but not really being with the band and not really being with the venue. I'm like, I'm not really under anybody's purview, which is great.
Right. Yeah. I mean, who does this guy report to? Guinan? Is Guinan the boss of 10 Forward?
I think so.
And if not, who is?
She's got that office. She's got that nubby gun. I would say whatever she says goes.
I love the idea of Guinan doing a before 10 Forward opens sort of like gather the troops and talk about the specials for the day.
Yeah, they've
and
got like
well, we got a birthday coming up. You know, we got to get the special cupcake with the weird candle ready.
Yeah.
Everyone remembers we don't sing happy birthday in this establishment.
Here's a new molecular gastronomy cocktail I invented. Everybody take a small sip. Yeah. We are trying to push this hard. This is the special. We want to sell a lot of this today, people.
Got a great prize for the waiter, for the server who sells the most of these. Day off on Friday, so push the cocktail.
Guys, just so you know, on the last shift, we had a surprise health inspection. Did not go super well. I need to remind everybody that there's got to be cellophane on top of a container of milk if you're putting it aside for any amount of time. They really dinged us on that one, guys.
Wilson, I know you were on the hood, and they don't really care about meat entering the danger zone of temperature over there.
The hood is very happy ship, to hang a C in the window of their 10 Forward.
Yeah, 10 Forward is an A establishment only. It has to be.
Yeah, it's got to be. These guys are all drinking Negronis, which is pretty cool. They've also, like, added three-dimensional checkers to all of the tables in 10 Forward in this episode.
Yeah, it seems like sort of a step down, doesn't it?
Yeah. These guys are playing three-dimensional checkers, and the bridge officers are playing three-dimensional chess.
It's great, though, because, like, no one ever touches the games.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like a fun game, right?
Checkers has never been fun.
No. It sucks.
So Lavelle believes that he is not going to get the promotion, even though he's up for it.
He wants it so bad.
Ogawa's so bubbly and positive. She's like, no, bud, it's totally yours. But when the waiter comes by and says, yeah, guess what? Lavelle and Sito are up for the same job. That sows right away the tension that will be carried throughout the episode between the two. Like, Sito's all like, Lavelle, you're great. I'm sure you'll get it. And Lavelle's like, but Riker hates me. Everyone remember that, how much Riker hates me. And if you forget, I will remind you throughout the episode.
Lavelle is an interesting character, and I think I don't like him because I see a lot of myself in him. He, like, totally overestimates how much other people are thinking about him.
Right. It's a weird kind of vanity, isn't it?
It really is. It is something that I'm very, very much guilty of most of the time.
His pessimism is something that I definitely vibe with. But his oversharing of that pessimism is something that I don't generally do.
Yeah.
The Vulcan is the fourth guy at the table, and he is pretty standard issue Vulcan. He's just sort of like logically irritating everyone at the table.
Bonestock Vulcan.
Yeah.
I think this guy was on Voyager, too.
You really get close to that season one, season two uniform in this episode. Like, you forget how shiny that is. And he's wearing it. It makes him look so skinny because it's spandex.
Yeah, he looks like a rail.
So back on the bridge, they're near Cardassian space, the Enterprise is.
They're doing some training.
What the hell is he running a missile drill now for?
They're doing, like, Kobayashi Maru. And
what?
They're doing, like, simulations.
Yeah. Yeah, and this has got to be some of the
most
fun...
You know, like, my Kobayashi Maru pun?
I really don't, Ben. You're better than that. You're better than a cheap poo joke.
All right. Well, I'll think about it. It's a tactical simulation, and Ensign Sito, the Bajoran, is not quite as quick as she'd like to be. You know, like, they got a drill on this missile test.
It's the best they can do. No, sir, but that's what they did.
Missile readiness test, whether or not there's a fire in the galley.
I really love the specificity that Riker gets with her on his critique. Like, she's a tactical and she's having a hard time locking the phasers.
Yeah.
And Riker actually talks a little inside baseball about how to use the targeting computer, and I thought that was great.
Next time, try letting the locking relay float until the actual order to fire is given. They may not teach that trick at the academy, but it works.
Give me more of that sort of techno babble. Like, normally we're hearing all about, like, the ductwork of the Enterprise and what pipes connect to what other pipes.
Yeah.
But, like, this is practical tactical.
Yeah.
It's great.
Gotta let that locking relay float, Adam.
That's right. He does it in a way that totally discloses that he is a good teacher.
Yeah. You know, this episode is really from the perspective of these four ensigns. And so, like, we don't get a lot of context for what's going on. And while they're all sitting there on the bridge, they get a... I feel like this is when, like, Picard comes in and he's like, hey, guys, change of plans. We're going to this other system. And, you know, we're just left to wonder what the mission even is.
Is this also the scene where they gather in the observation lounge and Sito and Lavelle are at ops and con? This is that scene, right?
Yeah, yeah. All the senior officers, like, walk off the bridge together and... Sito comes down and parks it at ops, and that seat that she plopped herself in is the one that they are both competing for. So it's there's some pregnancy of competition in that moment.
Sito seems interested in what's happening in the observation lounge in a very obvious way. Like, I think anyone would be interested in what's going on, and Lavelle just isn't even trying to hear it. Lavelle is pissed about how he acted during the drill. And he can't get it out of his head still that Riker hates him. And Sito's like, man, I would love to know what they're talking about in there. And Lavelle is like, I'm such a fuck up. I'm so stupid.
I said I twice. Riker hated that.
Yeah. Yeah, Lavelle's a little bit of a tryhard too.
Yeah. Yeah, he really wants to turn his reputation around, but he is really inept at doing that.
It's natural when you know that an authority figure, or when you surmise that an authority figure might not like your whole deal, to, like, try to up your game a little bit. And it's so cringy to watch him try and then just get rebuffed every time.
Yeah. It me.
Yeah. So the deal is they're on the edge of Cardassian space and they got to scan for an escape pod that they soon find. And this is a super secret mission because only the senior staff knows about it. And what you see from the lower decks perspective is how much anyone who's outside of that senior bubble knows anything about what's going on this mission, or probably mostly others, right?
I mean, this mission seems like particularly sensitive because they're dealing with, like, a secret informant, but they have some real fun with the way they unfold the app, like they're beaming the person out of the escape pod, and you see the transporter start in six bay, but the shot cuts before it resolves, and it's only kind of hinted at who that person might be.
Yeah.
You get to hear the ensigns speculating about who it might be. I really like that Ben suggests it might be Spock, and Torek is like, no, that doesn't make any sense. No. Spock wouldn't be in Cardassian space.
Torek thinks about Spock all the time. Like, the idea that Spock could be on board, I think, would totally melt his brain.
Yeah, Torek is causing some grief for Geordi because he's got some like scheme about how they're going to improve their warp efficiency or something, and he's been like taking the liberty of running simulations on it.
You got a problem here. Your plasma flow to the nacelles is out of sync.
Actually, sir, that was done deliberately.
It's that kind of try-hard thing that makes everybody else look bad because they're not going above and beyond. And
right.
So Geordi is like, all right, man, like I'll fucking read your little pup paper or whatever, like... Come on, like, let's focus on the job we actually came here to do.
Geordi makes that mistake of saying, yeah, like, let's set up a meeting on that, bud. And then, like, wheels around and walks away. And Torek's like, when? I'm ready. I hate that trap.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to be diplomatic. You don't want to say fuck off, but really, like, let's set up a meeting is sort of a soft fuck off.
It's the, like, yeah, I hope I make it to the party. You know, it's the...
Right.
It's the plausible, like, leaving yourself as many plausible outs as you can, and the person, like, is not picking up on the social cues and really wants to pin you down on an answer, will you be at the party?
Yeah, Geordi may be the least equipped to handle social cues, but Tarek is even worse.
Yeah, Geordi gets a little taste of his own medicine.
Yeah.
And speaking of missing social cues, Ogawa keeps having conversations with Beverly where Beverly is really trying to be like her pal and like, you know, just trying to have like the friendly chit-chat of friends.
How are things going between you and Lieutenant Powell?
And Ogawa is, like, unable to drop rank.
Actually, I just wanted to tell you that Ensign Riley's condition is showing improvement.
Like, I kind of feel like Beverly is promoting her so that they could just be, like, on closer to equal footing so that Ogawa can stop, like, deferring to her so reflexively.
I don't know, man. I think I might be on the opposite side of that take because when you are a subordinate and your authority figure keeps like asking you personal questions about your life, you feel obligated to answer because of the power imbalance there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like she is flattered that Beverly takes an interest in her life, but I don't know if she's totally comfortable with it. And what's Beverly's deal? Like, I wish Beverly wasn't such a prior in her life or anyone else's. Like, that's sort of a character trait of hers now, is like asking the personal question all the time.
Maybe she's just trying to get, she's trying to develop a new breakfast bud.
Yeah.
Can't be all Picard all the time.
I think you're probably more right than I am about the Ogawa Beverly relationship. I think there is true and genuine affection between them. But I do understand the initial reticence to share personal facts about yourself, given their professional relationship, you know?
Yeah.
And the idea that she may be obligated to do so in order to get a promotion.
What else she should have to do is bring in a basket of croissant every so often.
Right. Exactly.
My love is a fever.
There's a couple of mysteries going on alongside this mystery escape pod. One is that nobody really knows why Sito got suggested as getting promoted to ops, because she's a tactical officer. And there's like a scene in 10 Forward where Worf is like, yo, I put you up for that because I think you're great. I think you got a lot of talent, kid. And that comes as kind of a shock to her. Like she's just trying to like do her thing. She's not, she does not perceive Worf to be like paying that close attention to her. And Worf is like, Worf really shows himself to be kind of a great boss in this episode.
Like I really, completely agree.
Really like is like making insightful choices about how to manage his people.
Physically kicking a subordinate's ass when necessary.
Yeah, he takes care of him.
This to me was the most interesting plot line of the ep. I mean, there are threads drawn between all four of these characters and then people on the senior staff.
Yeah.
But this Sito-Worf relationship I found totally fascinating, and it's because they don't say it that makes it so great. I mean, Sito is someone who is living with a great dishonor and still carries on with her life and her career in a way that I know Worf understands. But Worf never says that openly. He uses metaphor. He uses physical examples of violence on her. He says everything without saying it in a way that I think great leaders do.
Mm-hmm. And he lets her kind of arrive at what she needs to do by just kind of showing her the door. She's the one that walks through it. Obviously, he can't because he doesn't know how to work it.
Right.
There's also the scene where Geordi has Torek down in the shuttle bay and he's just having him like phaser the shit out of a Previa. And Geordi keeps going like, why are we shooting this Previa? And Geordi's like, we're testing the phasers.
It made me nervous how close to the target Geordi stood at any given point. Like, yeah. In any firing of any weapon, I feel like no one should be downrange. And there's Geordi trusting an ensign to not kill him.
Yeah, he's like, shoot it right there. And like the beam hits like inches from where Geordi's finger is.
It's got to be like, do you remember your first job? Like my first job was working at a grocery store and like bagging groceries as a 15 and a half year old. And like occasionally I would be given a job that was way outside that scope of work. It was like go back to the cardboard baler and like bale a new bin of cardboard. And I would like relish that because it was so different. Like I would get to do that once a month and it would be like off the floor in the back by myself. Like that was the best part. And I feel like Torek is given as an engineer ensign, like the most unique job of that he could get, which is like shooting a phaser at a shuttlecraft. Like for a Vulcan, he's got to enjoy that as much as a Vulcan can.
Yeah. He's also like not fooled at all by the lie that they're testing the phasers or, you know, making sure the phasers are doing good. He's put it together that they are making this ship look like it's gotten into a scrape.
Yeah, and he's a volatile combination of Vulcan and Tryhard at this point. Like he can't help himself. He can't help himself from proposing a more efficient way to scar the shuttlecraft and make it look like it was, you know, sustaining battle damage. And Geordi is just not trying to hear it. A Vulcan's hard to shut down once they have their mind on something, you know? Geordi is just ill-equipped.
Yeah. They're like a pit bull, you know? They just get lockjaw.
Yeah.
There's a fun sequence in here where Riker and his gang are playing poker and then the ensigns are playing poker and it kind of like uses close-ups on chips and cards to intercut between them.
Really deft.
Yeah. Like, maybe not as tightly edited as it could be, but it's, you know, it kind of establishes similarities between Lavelle and Riker, like as if they like weren't already clear enough. Like Lavelle like plays the same kind of poker as Riker, and the ensigns are talking about their ambitions at the same time as the upper deck people are talking about like where they, you know, like how they got to where they are and like how they feel about the people that they're considering for these promotions.
Troy is like an empath feeling empathy. Like, the case she's making to Riker is like, I think what you might be feeling right now is like the narcissism of minor differences between you two. Like, yeah, you were that guy once. You were an ensign trying to get the attention of a commanding officer who maybe didn't like you. Mm-hmm. Like, you see this guy walking around the ship swinging his leg over chairs? Like, he's just like you.
It's funny, man.
Riker's
it's...
having a hard time hearing it, but Troy's right.
Do you think Troy finds Lavelle attractive for the same reason that you found that era of Riker attractive?
Oh, that's interesting. I bet. What if she wants Lavelle to be promoted so she can be closer to him? Like, Lavelle gets more bridge time, Troy gets more bridge time, they get more bridge time together.
Mm-hmm.
She fits him for a back zip.
That thing zips all the way down. The other thing that's happening in this episode is that Sito has caught the attention of Captain Picard, and there's a really intense scene where he pulls her into his office and really rips into her about the fact that she had that cover-up in her past. And he's like, you know, like, what the hell am I even supposed to think about you? Like, why are you here? Like, how can anybody trust you after what you did? And she's pretty shaken up by it. Like, she does okay in the moment.
In a lot of ways, it would have been easier to just walk away, but I didn't. I stuck with it. Doesn't that say something about my character, too?
But he's basically attacked her character, and it's a very interesting side of Picard to see, because we don't have a lot of context for why he's doing it yet.
He withers her in such a way that she has no response. Like, she is totally taken down and then leaves. I think the thing that gives this scene a lot of weight is the scene that comes before, which is Sito's joy at the idea that Picard has sort of tapped her shoulder and asked her to come with him on a walk that she doesn't know the destination of.
Yeah.
She's excited and like thrilled that the captain noticed her. And the reversal of that feeling is so massive that I think it gives a lot more weight to the undressing that Picard gives her. Like, he just verbally murders her in the ready room.
Yeah. So Worf, like, is doing some Klingon yoga, and like he tells her, like, basically, you've gotten to a level where you can move on to the advanced class of Klingon yoga, but first you've got to pass this test where I put a blindfold on you. I was watching him cover her eyes up and thinking about what the HR department would think about this, but it winds up being like a very instructive moment for her where, she's like, fuck this. This test is bullshit. Like, how the fuck am I... It's also kind of a repudiation of Star Wars.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see. How am I supposed to fight?
It's not fair to test me when I can't see, basically.
The thing I was thinking of the whole time was, like, Worf's all, I must administer the Kumite test. You might be familiar with it from the end of the film Bloodsport, when Frank Dukes was blinded. And Sito is not able to fight off her attacker the way Frank Dukes does.
Sad.
She gets her ass kicked in such a major way. One scene in particular, like, made me laugh out loud. She, like, sort of front kicks, and Worf is massive next to her. I think Worf has like a foot and a half on her.
Yeah.
She front kicks.
She goes
Worf
for a
grabs
real
the
high
kicking
kick.
Foot. Yeah. Like, holds it and then grabs the other foot with his other hand and, like, full somersaults her. It looks like a video game.
It's good stuff. And
yeah, I wonder if they had to blindfold her because they had to stunt woman her, and shooting it that close, there was no way to cover that up except with a blindfold. I wonder if there was like a practical reason for that and
maybe
not just a story reason.
But the story reason is like the most interesting part of it, because he says, like, mm-hmm. It took courage for you to say that this was a bullshit test. Like, that's what it was testing. And that really puts some wind in her sails. And she goes back to Picard and she's like, hey, bub, like, I did the crime, but I also did the time. Like, you're not the fucking tribunal that is hearing about the bad thing I did. It is not your place to repunish me for that just because you had some strong personal feelings about it. So if you don't want me on this ship, that's fine. I'll go somewhere else. But I'm going to like be the best officer I can be despite my past. And I would appreciate not getting shit on by you about it.
Cito's like, I lit my plasma farts on fire at the academy and you were a Borgs. Like, and you got your job right back. So fuck off, man.
Dang.
You think what I did was anywhere nearly as bad as what you did? No one ever drops the Borgs bomb on Picard. And Cito really could have.
Yeah, that would have been nice. He's like, listen, Cito, like, the reason that I was being a dick to you was to make sure that you had what it takes to do a really scary assignment. So why don't you come with me to the observation lounge and we're going to talk about it. And they go in there and there is a Cardassian. And it is explained to Cito that this dude has been like feeding information to the Federation. And he actually snuck out of Cardassian space to give them a bunch of intel on what the Cardassians are up to. And now they need to get him back to the Cardassians. And the only way to do that is to make it look like he stole a shuttle and took a Bajoran prisoner, like make it look like he's a bounty hunter. And if she goes with him and does this, they'll send her back across the line in an escape pod, much the same way he came across, and they'll get her back. But it's a dangerous mission she's signing up for.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
She's not conscripted into doing it. Like, and Picard is very clear about this. Picard's like, this is a fucked up mission. Like, TBH. And there is a fair to middling chance of death here. So I'm not going to order you to do this. And Cito's like, I volunteer. I'll take it. I love it. Bruise me up.
Captain Picard, obviously it would be ideal not to put another member of your crew into danger, but I simply cannot turn out a real doll with a Bajoran nose. I've been trying for years. I'm no good at it. I could make you a real doll that'll let you use the high occupancy vehicle lane, but any close inspection will reveal that it's not an authentic Bajoran.
Perhaps you could loan me your ancient Shito, and then I could make some sort of nose mold. So that I could then create a real doll with realistic Bajoran nose molds.
What I'm saying, though, is that it'll take a little time, and if this mission is timely, you may want to just risk her life needlessly.
We know this show has plastic surgery technology. Like, they could have used a lieutenant, like an actual security lieutenant, made them up to be a Bajoran, and then had someone capable of fighting back. Yep. In that shuttle.
Instead, they send Sita, and she gets in the Previa with this Jorette doll, and they fly off, and she's like, they're like sitting there, and she's like, why the fuck are you working with Starfleet if you are a Cardassian? Like, I have no contact for a Cardassian that doesn't just kill Bajorans wantonly. What's up?
His answer is so interesting because he doesn't say, I'm tired of killing Bajorans. He doesn't say, I don't hate Bajorans. His problem is with war itself.
If the information I provided helps Starfleet deter even one pointless skirmish, I've served my purpose. I'm sick of war.
And just how tired he is of living in conflict.
Yeah,
I thought that was an interesting way to state his case. And if I were Cito, that would not give me any. That would not make me feel better. Like, what I want to hear is, no, Bajorans are cool. I think you guys are totally misunderstood.
Yeah.
He's like, You know what? My trigger finger is actually getting really tired from shooting all the Bajorans.
Yeah. Well, he read some von Clausewitz and really just kind of changed his perspective on things.
Yeah, I'm really tired of digging all the mass graves for Bajorans. My backyard is a shambles.
My backyard is a shamble, and my back is killing me. Oi!
Cito just sort of like scoots away from him a little bit after this. Cito's bruise makeup looks very realistic and troubling, yeah, to the degree that before she boards the shuttle, Worf is like, oh, whoa, like... Who did this to you?
Yeah, I'm going to fucking kick his ass. What's his name?
Yeah, like Worf takes a step back into karate stance, like ready to take someone on. And I think this does a little bit of a time jump, right? Like this is the last scene that we get inside the shuttle.
Yeah, they're like getting close to the border and he puts some shackles on her wrists and that's the last we see of them.
At what point were you sure that Cito was going to die?
I think in this scene. I don't think it seemed certain to me in the McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Yeah. I think this was the moment, right? Like I thought this was very good story craft in that the cut to includes the time jump. And they're looking for the pod that she's supposed to be in and she didn't show up. The idea that she dies off screen makes it more devastating, I think, than if you had seen her pod attacked by a Cardassian ship. Like,
and it's also that like fog of war thing where they're like kind of not feeling good about her chances, but they're still kind of holding on to some hope. You know, it's like... Like, they're watching the election results come in, and they're like, God, like, Florida's looking like it's going Trump. Like, fuck, this is not necessarily good. Like, maybe we'll pick up some states in the Midwest, but shit.
I thought it was very much in keeping with the leitmotif of the entire episode, which is, like, about perspective, right? Mm-hmm. It's the perspective of our Lower Decks Greek chorus. It's the perspective of the senior staff. It's the perspective of the ship in relation to the shuttlecraft and then the escape pod. Like, yeah, they do a great job only showing things from those points of view. And as soon as they leave in the shuttle, you lose that perspective when you come back to the Enterprise. And that I thought was a great parallel that they drew.
Picard gets on the radio and announces to the whole ship that they're pretty sure she's gone and that she was a great officer that deserves a lot of respect for what she did.
She was the finest example of a Starfleet officer and a young woman of remarkable courage
and strength of character.
Great moment for Picard's character here. Just the solitude of command once again. Just a man alone in a room behind a desk eulogizing someone that he sent to their death.
Yeah.
Pretty powerful moment.
And the last little scene is a 10 forward bum out. And Worf is like off in the window by himself. And the three surviving ensigns are at a table with each other. And Ben, the waiter, like convinces Worf to go hang out with them and like talk to them because they all are feeling the same thing.
Yeah, that was a great moment. I mean, Worf sees through Ben's manipulation.
I appreciate what you are trying to do, but it is not appropriate.
But the manipulation is coming from such a place that Worf finally acquiesces to the feeling of it, mm-hmm, and the feeling of it being pure. And that the episode ends with him just sitting down and no one saying anything, I thought was especially powerful as well. Like, I think words would diminish that moment.
Totally.
Lavelle got his promotion and he got the pins. And there's no satisfaction for him, is there?
No. I mean, you can't really feel like you earned it if the person you were in competition with died.
Those are bloody pips, aren't they?
Yeah, it's got blood all over those pips.
Ben, did you like this episode?
This episode is on my mountain, Adam. I think it's fantastic. It's so interesting to see the show from a different angle. It's so strong in so many ways. Like, it's very emblematic of like some of the best stuff this show is doing this season,
yeah,
where like theme and motif are really flawlessly being heightened in every scene. And it adds so much dimensionality to the ship. Like, you know, you can't help but think about where these characters are and what they're doing in subsequent episodes. How about yourself?
I agree. I wish we'd gotten one of these episodes every season. And
yeah,
maybe we could have known these characters every time. Like, maybe this is the seventh time we could have visited them. And maybe Cito's death would have had even more emotional gravity because we could have known her for so much longer. I thought all of the characters were likable in their own way. It is strange to say that in a series with seasons that are 26 episodes long, that there wasn't time for this kind of storytelling. But like, when I consider how many other B stories this thread could have been a part of,
yeah,
like, that's a missed opportunity, right? There wasn't time in a lot of episodes to tell this story, but I think we could go back and do a census of episodes of all the episodes that we hated the B story on and transplanted this B story on instead, and would have been, I think it could have redeemed a lot of bad episodes.
Yeah.
And that's a sort of retconning that I think about a lot when watching a episode this great. And this is on my mountain too, Ben. It's one of the great episodes for sure.
I mean, the other thing I kind of wished we had more of that is in this episode is secrecy. You know,
yeah,
like, they're like, it's so fun when the doctor has to ask everybody on her staff to clear the room because they're going to beam on somebody that nobody else is allowed to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish like some of that behavior had been established from the other side earlier in the series.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like all the best episodes of this show how much potential it had. And when it achieves at this level, it's so sad to think about how many times they also stepped up to the plate and took three big swings and missed.
That's something that I'm trying really hard to get away from, like, in criticizing the show. Like, it's so hard to look at it in an episode in isolation and go, great episode, without also going, why aren't the other episodes as great? Like, that to me...
Okay, I'm an idiot, Adam. Fuck you.
No, I'm not criticizing your critique. I'm saying this is something that I'm trying to work on with me in enjoying a television show that I love, is like taking these individual moments for what they are a little better. And, you know, I say this after leveling the critique of, why didn't we get seven? It's like greedy fan mentality, right? Like,
yeah,
that was really great. Why didn't you give me more? You know? And I think in our did you like this episode conversation, I think that is something to consider. And I think we both feel the same way. Like, great ep, wish there were more. Grateful that we have this one.
Indeed, Adam.
You know what other thing I'm grateful for, Ben?
What?
I just love reading P1 messages.
Me too, let's do it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Lisa, your sweet potato penguin. It is for 6th anniversary husband, Bear Ben Douglas. The message goes like this. Vila, now... Oh, okay. This is a Bob Vila?
What is that?
That's not Bob Vila. Bob Vila isn't in this old house. Okay, so I guess this is going to be a this old riff. I wish you had had this one instead, Ben, but here we go. Now, when you're wishing a happy anniversary to your husband, you're going to want to get your favorite podcast to do the job. And then we go back into normal voice. Thank you for forcing me to watch Star Trek because I love it. You are my very own fully functional android. Here's to the uncountable infinity of our joy together. P.S. Thanks to Greatest Gen for bringing us closer. Aww. Ben, we're bringing people closer.
That's great.
We're putting bears with penguins in a in defiance of God.
Yeah, I'm all for, you know, marriage equality, but I do not think a bear and a penguin should be together.
I disagree completely. I'm pro Bear Ben. I am pro Lisa Potato Penguin.
Adam, we have another message here. And this one has some instructions as well that we need to make a new Baker Street drop for it. This message is from Rob and JL Pipes. The dog? She's my dog, young JL Pipes. And it is for Hope. I'm late for our anniversary and early for your birthday, so just because is my reason to drop some scarves. I love you as much as Riker loves consent. As much as Worf sucks at being a dad, as much as Plavim hates Raz. I love being a little bit embarrassed with you, and I'll always be your drunk Shimoda as we boldly go through the universe. Oh,
this is the doggy daddy of JL Pipes, the dog that we've seen on Facebook over the last couple of weeks, yeah?
Yep.
Pretty great. Ben, I feel like being a little bit embarrassed with whoever you're with is like a great foundation for a relationship. Because that's like real intimacy, right? When you're intimate enough with someone to share some embarrassment with them, I think that's
vulnerable in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Jury's out as to whether or not that vulnerability supersedes being late for an anniversary wish. But, hopefully this gets you out of the doghouse where you're currently sleeping with that new dog, Rob. Hopefully Hope has the capacity for forgiveness.
Fingers crossed.
Well, Ben, our show has the capacity for more Priority One messages. If you've got a message you'd like to send a loved one, a hated one, or anyone in between, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. They are a great way to help with the ongoing production of our program. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment. Recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bunch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame.
That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
Gotta give it to Sam. I've wanted to give it to him all through the ep, but the thing that really like sealed the deal for him was showing up at the "we are in 10 forward feeling awful because our friend just died" hang and making it all about himself. he plops himself down in the chair, puts the pip on the table, and just like, God, I just feel terrible. It's like, dude, fucking don't make it about yourself for 1 second. Your friend is dead.
Yeah, I mean, that was such a tough pivot. Like, and it's not the actor's fault at all. Like,
no,
this
it's
is,
in the script. It's the character.
Yeah, yeah. That was tough, man. Like, you have to button the episode with who gets the promotion because you introduce that from the beginning.
Yeah.
But oof.
I think that, it's good writing. It's just like that is such a flaw in that character.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes a likable character up until then unlikable. Like, I like how Sam fucks it up with Riker going up and like getting a drink next to him. Like,
yeah.
He's sort of a lovable doofus.
Yeah. Oh, Canada and Alaska both have snow.
I really admire Sam for that. Like, that is a big, that moment where you cross a room and talk to someone you're nervous to talk to is a big moment, and he does it. And who is more, like, we've known Riker for 7 seasons as someone that we love as much as any character, but like, he's intimidating. He's a big dude, and he's the XO of the ship. Like, mm-hmm. It's a big moment to step to him. And, God, he just eats so much shit in that scene. I guess what I'm trying to say is he's also my drunk Shimoda for that moment. Yeah. I had a hard time choosing between him and Ben. The reason I would have given it to Ben is the whole, like, he cleans up the Lower Decks poker game and then goes, he doubles down on the senior officers game. Like,
yeah.
I've played a lot of poker, and I feel like, when you've done well and you leave, you do not play another game and you do not come back later on. That's how you lose the money. And so that was a poor move by him. But I don't know. Sam was very endearing in that scene with Riker. And the way that Riker plays it during that scene is very entertaining too. Like, a guy who is amused, a guy who's letting himself hang himself in front of you socially. Good times.
Good times.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is Season 7, Episode 16, Thine Own Self. Having completely lost his memory, Data is stranded on a primitive planet where the inhabitants fear he is carrying a deadly plague. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
This is the episode I always think of whenever I go to like a street fair. Or like a farmer's market or something, like whatever, whatever market, like where they close off a street and there's like pop tents and there's
Zeppelies and shit,
where like people set up booths and they sell like handmade jewelry and stuff. Every time I see the handmade jewelry, I think it might be radioactive. So that's what I remember from this episode, is like how it ruined handmade jewelry for me.
Well, handmade jewelry, not that great to begin with.
Yeah.
That'll be the next episode, Adam.
Looking forward to it. One thing that that always warms the host's hearts about this show, warms it without being proximal to a piece of metal that is radiating warmth on its own, are the conversations that happen on social media, Ben.
Yeah.
Twitter,
mm-hmm.
Reddit,
yep,
Facebook.
Yes.
That's like the holy trinity of social media right there, and we've got presences on all of them.
Yeah.
Presence A.
Yeah, very non-shitty presences, too. Like, people are nice and fun with each other and making cool artwork and drawings and stuff.
I think one of the awesome reasons that they're so pleasant is that the few times where people step out and are dicks, the pig pile on whoever that person is massive.
Yeah.
That is a very well self-policing place.
Yeah, it's good. Well, we should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for a lot of the other music you hear on the program. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And an episode of The Greatest Generation that is in way too heavy of woolen clothes to be filmed in Southern California. That's for sure.
Welcome back from the tour, Ben. I am very confident that it will have gone great. I'm sending, past Adam is sending positive vibes to future Adam and Ben.
Hey, thanks, past Adam.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.